everybody. Welcome to another edition of Ron Green Radio. I am your host, Doug. We got a guest tonight, Jason Sheff from Chicago. He's going to be awesome. Lots of good stuff to talk about. He is going to be touring with Mr. Rundgren. As most of you probably know, we may have some new listeners tonight that are fans of Jason. We hope you are and you're willing to call and ask him a question if you like at 646-716-9262. You need to press 1. Want to do that. And I know we're competing tonight with a little television deal. It looks like we got a lot of people in here, so that's pretty good. Got a little good start anyway. Cruiser Mel is a little under the weather, so I'm not sure if she's going to join me or not. So the pressure is on for me to entertain you alone until Jason calls in. So that should be here in about 15 minutes or so. He'll be giving us a call, and hopefully tonight we're going to find out some stuff about the White Album tour. What's going on? What's his role? What's Todd's role? What's everybody else's role? Who's in the band? Anything we can get out of him, we're going to try to get. Can't guarantee anything. I don't know, but we're going to find out. But we'll start announcements first. Let's get into the White Album Tour, which we just discussed. There's 3 new dates have been added. 2 of those are in Florida. I see Florida fan Veronica in the chat room. She is probably thrilled because she's going to get Clearwater, Florida, Ruth Eckerd. Todd goes there a lot, actually. I've been there to see him. Utopia. And Fort Lauderdale, Broward Performing Arts Center. 2 good venues for this show. And then there was another date added for Kansas City, Missouri. So you got Mark Wooden and Q over there and Corky. Chris Williams. I'm sure they'll all go to that show. If you need tickets for that show in Kansas City, by the way. That one kind of snuck on the website, so I bought a couple, actually I bought 4 really good seats, just because I knew somebody would want them. And as always, I sell them for face value. So if you're interested in that, just shoot me an email at doug@rundgrenradio.com. I've got 1 claimed, I think, but there's at least 3 left. Excellent seats without having to do the VIP. So there you go. Another good thing about the White Album Tour is we're going to get to do it in Akron, Ohio. That's right. Rundgren Radio returning to our favorite place to do a Todd show, Akron, Ohio. That one will be September the 28th. We're having our party, the birthday bash. Year 12 will be September 27th. We're going to have that as usual, pretty much, in a hotel ballroom. I guess that's not always the case, but this time it is going to be. That seems to be what everybody likes. That's what we did last year with RRXI. So if you want in on this action, you can go to our website, rundgrenradio.com, and scroll down to the bottom of the menu, and you should see something about the Rundgren Radio Birthday Bash 2019. It's got all the information on there, where the hotel is, what you need to do to get tickets for that, information about the concert. This is the next night that we're presenting with Todd and the other guys in the White Album Band, which, by the way, let's just go ahead and tell you that is Christopher Cross, Mickey Dolenz, Joey Mollen, Jason Sheff, Todd Rundgren. And Gil Glasses is going to be in the band. There's 3 people in the band besides the 5 celebrities. One of them is Gil. Do not know the rest. I do know one of them is a drummer, which means Mickey will not be the drummer. So he'll be front and center, which is kind of what I expected. So you've got a really good, fun Beatles show. If you're into that, if you're not, I'm going to get you into it tonight because I'm going to play you some clips from the White Album. And you'll go, oh, yeah, I know all those songs. And they're awesome songs. So we're going to do that because Cruiser Mel's not here to chat with me, so I don't want to go all day and bore y'all to tears with my voice. Speaking of Glasses, though, he did launch a new video today with his buddy from Dream Theater, a very popular band, Jordan Rudess. So go to Gil's Facebook page if you haven't seen that, and you'll be good to go to check it out. So that's coming up on Facebook. Most of you are members. If not, I don't know, maybe it'll be on YouTube. Probably is. Just do Gil or Glasses. You'll find it. And that's really about all I got for announcements. I don't really have anything else. You know, there's the tour. Todd's going to do a romantic cruise. That's what it's called anyway. I guess they think he's going to bust out some ballads. Maybe he will. Jason Sheff's actually on that tour or on that boat for that trip as well. That's in February of 2020. You can find all that information on our tour page at rundgrenradio.com. It'll redirect you. It'll give you a link to EJ's page, which is thoroughly updated most of the time. She didn't have the three new dates yet, but I bet she does by now for the White Album show, Florida and Kansas City. So tickets go on sale tomorrow for both the Florida shows. The Kauffman Center is where Kansas City is. It's already on sale, but there's some good seats left. If you haven't got any, or you can contact me if you're interested in those that I have and support the White Album tour. It was 50 years ago today is how it's being billed. And I'm trying to think if there's anything else. I don't think there is. So hopefully we won't have any weirdos tonight in the chat room or calling in like we did last time. Hopefully we have that situation resolved. But if not, we're going to handle it. We're going to do the best we can. So if you missed last week's show, or whatever it was, 2 weeks ago, it was good. It was full of information about RRXII. Rungren Radio Birthday Bash 12. We got Chasm Sultan's Utopia, if you haven't heard, to be at our party. That's going to be awesome. We have She-Ra, the debut of the first ever female, all-female tribute band for Todd Utopia. We have the Hermits of Mink Halloween, who we've had many times over the last 12 years, with Faux Todd J-Faux. That's going to be fun. So we got three bands, plus we have a jam room. We've been to this place before in 2015, I think it was. And it's a great jam room down in the basement of the hotel, so we can be as loud as we want and do whatever we want. I think PJ Chesterfield is already working on some set lists for some of the people that want to be organized, but it's up to you. You can go down there and do whatever you want. You can party, you can play music, whatever. Just a good way to get away from the rest of the people in the hotel and not create problems. So that's part of what that's for. And we love hearing from everybody else that doesn't have a chance to perform on the stage that night. We mix that up a little bit, as you know. And without further ado, I think I'm just going to roll on into a little music for you because Jason's still got a little while before he calls in. And I'm going to play not all of it. It's a double album. It's a lot of stuff. But I got about 5 minutes here of songs that I bet you know all of them or most of them. And they should get you excited about this tour. Imagine which ones Todd will be singing, which one Christopher Cross will be singing, Mickey, Jason, Joey, and enjoy, and we'll be right back.
Fly all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to arise.
There you go, a little taste of the White Album. I don't see how you can listen to that and go, okay, this isn't going to be a good show, and I can't stand the Beatles. But there's some people out there. But maybe they'll be converted, because that is a pretty good set of songs right there. I hope to find out tonight. I don't think that they're going to do the whole album. So we'll see if Jason can tell us or not. If they are, that's going to be one long show. I do know the show is expected to be 3 hours with an intermission, so maybe they are going to do all of it. We're going to see what we can find out tonight. Who knows? I did fail to mention that if you are interested in doing a tabletop display at the RRXII Party on September the 27th in Akron, Ohio, you need to get in contact with Cruiser Mail. Cruisermail at RunGunRadio.com. Send her an email, and she will assign you a table. We haven't come up with a theme yet for what it's going to be tabletop-wise. You know, you got the Beatles music, you got Todd's music, you got Chasm music, you got everybody in the band's music for White Album, you got Jill Sobule coming, you got all kind of crazy stuff. So we'll have to wait and see what's going on with Mel's ideas, your ideas, and how we want to do it. All right, we got a caller. I got a feeling I know what this is going to be, so I'm going to take it and see if we need to be concerned this evening. Hello, 818, you're with us.
Hey, this is Jason hey. Shaw.
Oh, hey, okay. We had some really weird calls last show, so I was like, this could be one of those people. And I thought you were going to be calling me from a Nashville number, but that's all good. Very nice. Thanks
hey,
for calling
you know
in.
What? You know what? You busted me. You did get a weird caller. Here we go. Let's go.
I don't think you can say the stuff those people said. You're too nice a guy. It was out there. I mean, really out there. So I hopefully we reported it. They got it fixed, so we don't have to deal with it tonight. But we do have fun on the show. We can do all kind of fun stuff, say whatever we want. It's a lot of fun. It's not FCC regulated. You may remember what that was back in the day on FM radio, but this is online. So feel free to say whatever you want, whatever you feel. Let's have a good time. Melinda's sick, so she's not going to be with me. I don't think she may chime in here every now and then. So it's you and me, which I'm excited about for a few reasons. I was realizing that you have done all the things that I would think about if I could be a musician or hang with people. You have done it recently or in the past, even in sports. I love golf. I grew up loving Kiss. I love Rush. I love Tide. You got connections to all of them. I hope to talk to you about that tonight. So, but before we get into all that, what's going on with you now, and you working on a new album, or have you got that album out?
Well, first of all, it's really great to be here, and I appreciate you having me on. I know a lot of the people that you've had in the past are a lot of people I really look up to, and so it's a pleasure to be here. I just came to Los Angeles last night from about a week and a half of being in Tennessee. I split my time between Tennessee and Los Angeles, and I was taking a meeting with Jay DeMarcus of Rascal Flatts, who's produced my solo record, and we took a meeting with the label, mapping out a little bit of a game plan of what we want to do. The album will be coming out in October. It was just mastered. Super happy about it. We have, it's funny you mentioned the people that I've been associated with. Yeah, I actually have Alex Lifeson on one of the tracks. I've got Tommy Thayer on one of the tracks. I've got Robbie Krieger, played some Killer Slide on one of the tracks, and The Doors. Bill Champlin has come to sing with me on some of the stuff. It's just really a lot of fun. There's Jay in there, so you got a little bit of Rascal Flatts vocal stuff in there. So we did that, and then we went and performed at the Miss Tennessee pageant. Jay's wife was Miss Tennessee in 1999, and so she hosts it along with Jay. They're hilarious, the two of them. They host it. I went out last year and performed with Jay, so we did it again this year, and it's really neat. It's in Jackson, Tennessee, just outside of Memphis, and so it's a smaller town, but they're just tickled to have entertainment and have us there. And so we had three days of golf, a lot of fun. Jay has a bunch of his wife's, so his father-in-law's buddies, golf buddies, are all all the guys we go and play with, and it's pretty sentimental because Jay's father-in-law passed away a couple of years, I think it's almost a couple of years now, so it's really this amazing feeling of being with his friends out there playing golf, and they talk about him. So we did that, and then went out to a Christian music conference in Gatlinburg, Tennessee. Jay's producing a band called Avalon, who's had a lot of hits, and so we all rode out, and I backed them up. I played bass, Jay played keys, and then I sang a couple of tunes, and just got back to Los Angeles yesterday, and so that's that. And just really getting, I'm so excited about this White Album thing. I got to tell you, really excited about it.
A lot of people are really excited about it. The fans, we've done well with the ticket sales. We're doing one of the shows, the one in Akron, Ohio, and Todd fans are happy about it. And I'm sure your fans are happy about it, and everybody else is. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's a big tour. It came out of nowhere. We don't know a whole lot about it, so we're hoping to kind of get some information from you as far as, you know, how did it come together and how did they pick the musicians and, you know, that kind of thing. And if you guys have already talked about what you're going to play, you know, love to get into some of that kind of stuff today on the show. If you want to do that now, we can do that now, or we can keep on talking about other stuff.
Well, you know, might as well. My attention span, the older I get, you know, just starts going haywire.
Yeah.
So while I can remember what we're talking about,
let's do it.
First of all, so Jay DeMarcus, like I said, you know, Jay DeMarcus produced Chicago 30. I started going out to, okay, you're going to discover something about me right now that I can't tell a short story. So I hope you have a little bit of time here.
Great. Let me.
But you told me there are no rules. So at any rate, in 2003, I showed up at the Washington State Fair in Puyallup, Washington. And it was 2 years after the horrific events of 9/11 in 2001, and we played. Chicago played on September 12th of 2001. We played the day after in Puyallup, Washington, at the State Fair, and it was the most bizarre feeling. A lot of bands had just about faced, and they were headed home, but we stayed out there. And there was a lady who was backstage that runs the event, and so we'd become friends over the years. And so this particular year was very bizarre, going to that gig and everybody's shell-shocked. And I'll tell you what, this is, let's see, 1985. So we're talking like 15, 16, 17 years maybe of me being into the band and performing these songs a lot over the years. And I was never delusional. You know, the songs that Peter Cetera wrote and sang, I never felt like, hey, these are my songs. And, you know, I had my own success of the songs I sang and wrote that became hits for the band. But I never was delusional saying, you know, this is mine now. But that night, when I sang Feeling Stronger Every Day, and I saw what happened in the audience, and realized that I was just being a messenger, and got that first feeling of it's not about you, I really felt connected to that song in a deep way. Well, 2 years later, I showed up there, and the next year we showed up, and that lady had this almost like a bittersweet smile. It was almost like you'd seen a soldier you were in the war with a year after, and we'd made it through. But there was a bit of a sadness to it. Well, the next year I showed up, and, you know, we were all a lot better a couple of years later. And she says to me when I walk in, she says, Jason, do you know who Rascal Flatts are? And I said, no. And she said, well, they're a country band, and they're really starting to heat up. And they were here 2 nights ago. And I said, and she said, they're huge Chicago fans. And I said, well, that's nice. And she said, and they even mentioned you guys on stage. They were so excited you were here. And I said, well, that's nice. And she said, and Jay wanted me to give this to you. And so she gave me a CD and a letter that he had written. And I thought it was going to be a Dear Chicago, like I'd seen a lot of times. But I opened it and it said, Dear Jason. And it was this beautiful letter of a kid who was 10 years younger than me in a band that was really starting to become very successful. And he told me that I had a hand in it. That Chicago was the band that made him want to be a musician, and that when Peter Cetera left the group, he thought that his band was over. And as the story goes, when he saw the video for Will You Still Love Me, and he was 13, 14 years old, he said he ran into the next room and told his mom, Mom, it's going to work. They found the guy. So he told me that I was part of their lineage. And I was mind blown by it, because now there was this piece of the band's history that I was attached to. And so we started hanging out, and I started going back to Nashville and caught the fever again, like right when I joined Chicago. All these songwriters were trying to get to Rascal Flatts because they were really getting popular. And I went, wow, this felt like 1985 when I joined Chicago, and all these writers were all excited to meet with me because they were fans. They were the next generation back. So we started writing a bunch of tunes, and all of a sudden the opportunity came around to make a record, and management just loved the idea of Jay producing the record. So we get in and make Chicago 30 in 2006, I think it was, something like that, starting 2006, 2007. We finished that record, and it was a wonderful experience. And then it just kept going. Jay said, let's make a solo record. And I'm kind of going, well, I don't know about that. You know, records aren't really selling these days. So we started this record. And about 2 years into it, 2 years, that shows how fast we were working on it. 2 years into it, I just kind of put the brakes on it. I said, I just want to put this down for a while. So all of a sudden, you know, when life hits, I'm 57 now, and life hits, you know, with my in-laws got ill a few years ago, and that's when I was talking to the guys in the band about being able to come home and take care of them, and they were so gracious to understand, as we all do for each other when anybody had anything happen, you know, go do what you got to do. So I came home and did that, and we were able to live the rest of their years out with them, Tracy's parents. Jay started talking about, let's look at the record again. And I said, okay, great, man. So we pulled it out and had some really, really good stuff on it. So let's finish it up. We started working on it probably about a year and a half ago, maybe. And once it started getting close to getting done, Jay said, I'm going to start talking to some people around here. I'm going to talk to some agents. I'm going to, you know, really start looking around for you if you're interested in just doing some limited stuff. I said, yeah, I don't really want to leave home much, because, you know, we've been through a lot, and I've been afforded this opportunity to come and take care of my family, so I don't want to really be gone too much. So he started beating the bushes and found an agent in Nashville who said he really wanted to work with me. And the next thing he knows, he says, call this guy. He said, this guy really works these corners that you're talking about really well. I think he can help you. It was Toby Ludwig, the producer, one of the producers of the White Album tour. And I didn't know anything about him. You know, I'd heard, Jay got a phone call and they said, there's a special project and they are looking for a bass player who sings. And so they're very interested in Jason. So what would it take to get him to come out on the road? And Jay said, well, what is it? And they said, we can't tell you. It's an all-star band. And he goes, come on, man. I mean, we've all done this. I promise I won't tell anybody. Yeah, I promise I won't tell anybody. And they go, no, we can't tell you. Well, you know, what would it take? And so he said, listen, you know, if it's the right thing, you know, it's not even about that. We can work something out. And so he found out he was performing the White Album. And the lineup they had was Todd Rundgren, Christopher Cross, Mickey Dolenz, and Joey Mollen. And I heard that and I said, yes, 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 yes. So that's how it happened. And how funny is that? So from Jay DeMarcus leaving that letter all those years ago, all of a sudden weaving in and out, and the other stuff that, you know, if we have time, we get into, that's just unbelievable, the connections and the parallels with these artists and throughout my life and what it's meant. It's incredible that, you know, so there's some really cool stuff going on here right now with the universe and synergy. So that's how it all started.
Absolutely. Well, so for our listeners, some of them aren't aware, Toby that he mentioned is the agent for a few of the artists, at least for Christopher Cross, I know, but he is one of the founders of Flower Power. So you'll see Flower Power Presents this tour. And they've done other things, including stuff with Greg Hawks, who everybody listening knows from the Cars and the tours of Todd some. So they go way back in doing these type of shows, and this one's going to be a lot of fun. And you mentioned doing the White Album. One thing I can't figure out, are y'all going to do the whole album or just songs from that?
You know, the songs, are a lot of them are short. You know, they're not super long songs. So we're pretty, I've been told, we're going to cover as much of it as we can. Like I heard at first we do all of it, so we'll see. You know, we're going to be doing songs that were, as artists, that were written, that we're known for, a couple of hits each, you know, or at least, I don't know. It's going to be a long night of music. It's going to be very
3 hours.
It's going to be I hope so, you know.
Yeah, you're going to get your work cut out for you. So have you picked out, do you get to pick the songs that you're going to play, the hit songs, or do they tell you this is what we want you to play? How does that work?
Our hits, you mean the ones that we, as artists?
Right. Jason Sheff's hit. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they asked our suggestions of what we wanted to do. You know, I can't tell you what they are, but it's not hard to guess, you know, each guy, you know, what they're going to do.
Well, I saw that you had already had some discussion with Christopher Cross, and he was wanting to do some of the same songs you do from the Beatles album. So y'all, I guess, worked that out by now, who's going to do what?
Well, I haven't spoken to Christopher. I just assumed with his voice that he would just be, he sounds so great on a lot of that softer stuff. I don't want to give away what he's going to be doing, but you can just, I mean, if you think about it, if anybody knows what my voice sounds like, and they know what Christopher does, our voices are very suited for some of these really softer things. However, I also told Joey, the MD, I said, just know this, that, you know, because they said from day one, they said, Toby and Joey said, just tell us what you want to do, what resonates with you. And I said, well, okay, as long as it doesn't come across as me making a statement that I got to do these, because I think they're going to overlap. And just know that I'm totally comfortable if somebody really wants to do something, I'm fine. And you know, so I think the songs that I've heard so far that I'm going to be doing are probably not what people would expect out of me. And I love that. I love that.
That'll be fun.
Yeah, I got some fun stuff. You know, once we get into rehearsal, you never know if all of a sudden somebody goes, you know what, I think he'd be better on this, or why don't you take it?
Well, thanks to the Breaking Bad show series, we know that there's no doubt Joey's going to do Baby Blue, so we're kind of counting on that one. But other than that, it's all a guessing game, you know. Especially with Todd, he's all over the place, you know, what he wants to do sometimes and what he doesn't want to do. But, well, so that's a good story how you end up getting it all, you know, the wheel of karma, I guess, small world, and Jay having a connection with Toby. That's good stuff. You guys have got more shows to announce, too, I understand. The whole tour hasn't even been announced. It's going to be from early September to October sometime, right?
So far, yeah. I have a feeling that it just might expand, though, because there's just been really great reaction. I'll tell you this, you know, dare I say it, I feel pretty comfortable about this. I have a feeling that once we get out and start doing it, it's going to be amazing. And that's usually when it expands, you know, because I'm thinking of the voices. The voices, it's going to be insane. And Joey comes, you know, coming from the Rain production, his voice is so great, too, that, you know, I know a lot of the stuff has that beautiful doubling, you know, of Paul and John. And I like that kind of stuff. So I even talked to Joey and I said, man, I would love it if maybe on such and such a song as it is on the record, you and I double it. He goes, absolutely. So it's going to have a really, really big sound.
That's exciting. So have you worked with any of these people before, Chris or Joey or any of them on any kind of show? Or?
The only one is a friend of mine, Scott Frankford, produced an album on Christopher years ago, I want to say 20 years ago, and he asked me to play bass. I played some fretless bass on a real beautiful song of Christopher's, and he wasn't there, so I didn't really get to see him, but then years later, we played some shows together. Christopher in Chicago did a couple of shows together, so we got to connect then, but then when this came along, Toby told me that, because I mentioned that, I said, you know, I've met Christopher and I'm excited because we, you know, first of all, I'm a huge fan of his, but we got along well and I've played on his record. He goes, oh, I know. When I mentioned you, Christopher said something really sweet like, well, I'll tell you what, Jason's doing it. He's a real musician and he's a real nice guy. I said, fantastic.
Excellent. No ego in the room with Jason. That's great to hear. It's going to be fun. You know, you got five guys that have had hits and trying to figure out who's going to do what. It'd be an interesting conversation to be around. But you had talked about how music had been an influence for you in the after 9/11, what a touching moment was and how you realized how important music is to you. And I had checked out also that the same kind of experience happened with you when you got to play with Alex from Rush, which is one of my favorite bands. So I'd love to hear some more about that story and about you getting to play with him and how exciting that was, especially with, you know, Rush taking a possible permanent retirement and him coming out, you know, I don't know if that was planned or came out of nowhere, but, you know, you get to do three songs with him. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, thank you. It was, I had some friends that I run with, actually, Tommy Thayer, Danny Serafin, original drummer of Chicago, Danny, Tommy, Robbie Krieger of The Doors, and a couple of business guys around the Thousand Oaks area. They all, you know, we play golf, and then they're talking about, yeah, Alex, and I'm going, wow, man, that'd be great to meet Alex. Yeah, you'll meet him someday. So Robbie Krieger and Scotty Medlock, who's a great artist, like painter, they have a tournament here in Los Angeles. And so I played it a couple of tournaments ago, and then the second one came up. And they said, we got Alex coming to this one. And they said, would you like to play with him and do some Rush stuff? And I said, absolutely. And it's not the easiest stuff to play, as you can imagine. And certainly play and sing at the same time. So they were warning me. They were saying, man, not so much on the music and the challenge of it, but they were saying that, you know, Alex has come around and people have said, hey, get up and do a couple of Rush songs. And of course, you know, everybody wants to do it with him. Say, I'll sing it. And apparently it's been butchered pretty bad. So he was gun shy. And, you know, so when they asked him to do it again, he was kind of going, well, you know, I don't know. And Robbie Krieger, I mean, how cool is this, right? These are your friends. It's Alex Lifeson. He's a little tentative, and Robbie Krieger of The Doors says, Alex, it's Jason. Don't worry. You'll be fine. So he gave it a shot, and we went in and rehearsed it. And I'll tell you what, I'm a pretty quick study when it comes to music, you know, because the songs aren't really difficult. I can kind of feel where they're going to go and everything. But I put more time into learning those three Rush songs. And it was like, if I felt like it was back in junior high school or something. I mean, I spent hours working on that stuff because it is, some of it's really unorthodox. It's like the feels and the accents of the music and where he sings, some of his words are not where I would normally feel stuff, but I wanted to honor the music. I didn't want to, you know, reinvent it. So I put a lot of time into it, and we went and rehearsed, and it was the coolest thing because I don't know what we did first, maybe Limelight, and I just saw the smile on Alex's face. So we went and performed it at the tournament, and it was the coolest thing because I saw that he, you know, like you said, he's taken a break. Those guys have taken a break, and I don't know if they're really going to do it anymore. And this is his music, and he was able to play it that night, I hadn't played it a lot with them and hadn't rehearsed it a lot, so of course it was, you know, it had its little rough spots here and there for me, but in general, it was really cool, and I saw that it lit him up. So we connected. Alex and I really connected in a sweet way, and the next day, here's what's really fun. The next day we go out and we play the golf tournament, and so I'm playing with Alex, Grant Fuhr, the goalie, and a girl, Paula Trickey, who's an actress. So we're all moseying along in this round. We get up to this one hole, and I used to live out there at Moore Park Country Club. We get on this one par three. It's playing. I asked the girl, because it's a prize hole. I said, what's it playing? She goes, 171. And I know that there's always a little bit of wind in your face on this hole. I looked at Grant, and I said, what do you think, man, with the wind? He goes, play it for 175. So I pull a 6-iron out, and I literally said, just put this a little to the left of that flag, which was a tricky pin placement. Because this particular hole, if the flag is on the left side of the green, it's really flirting with disaster. Because you usually try and hit the left side of the green to have it roll down to the right. I put, with Alex Lifeson standing right next to me, I put like one of the best swings on a golf ball I'd ever, right off the club. Grant Fuhr says, that's going in the hole. And I'll tell you what, it bounced once and went into the hole. I had an ace with Alex Lifeson standing right next to me. It was crazy.
170 yards with a 6-iron. Impressive. Yeah.
Buck 75, actually, yeah.
But 175.
And with Alex Lifeson standing there, and we were flipping out. So it just made the Alex Lifeson thing that much better for me. Here we played Rush, and then what happened from that, man, was we became, you know, pals and took each other's information. And I asked him. I said, "Hey, I'm finishing a solo record. Would you be interested in playing on something?" He goes, "Absolutely." So I sent him a track, the title track of the album, actually, and I wanted him to do his Alex Lifeson crazy solo thing. But our record was so finished that I was actually going to like start ducking everything at the end of the song. And I tried to do that. I tried to send him a stripped down version, and he was on to it. He goes, "Is this everything?" I said, "Well, no, there's some other stuff, some strings." He goes, "Please send me everything." So I sent it to him, and he goes, "This thing's done." He goes, "Oh, let me just put some acoustic guitars." And I'm going, "Gee, I should have just said, no, it's not done, man." But at any rate, we got him on there. He sounds awesome on it. To tell you the truth, I just talked to him the other day and sent him some ideas. A drummer named Toss Panos is incredible. He played with Robin Ford for about 16 years. He was Robin's drummer. And I knew he was a Rush fan. I could just tell growing up. And I said, "Hey, man," I connected with Alex Lifeson. I said, "You want to throw some ideas around? Because he's interested in hearing, you know, anything we come up with." And so I sent him to Alex, and he liked him. So we're actually working on maybe some ideas together. Who knows?
Yeah, I said, you don't have to be one and done. Well, I know it's tough to be Geddy Lee. That's awesome that you got to do that. I love those videos. Have you seen his book, The Book of Bass?
I've heard about it. I haven't
seen
it yet.
Yeah. It's a bass player, man. It's a must-have. You got to get that book. Giant book. Beautiful book.
I know.
Tons of books.
I do. I want to have him sign.
You also played, I think you played golf. I think it was golf, or did some kind of charity tournament with another KISS guitarist. I know Tommy is it now, but Bruce, you did something with him too, right? You played golf with
Kulik?
Yeah. Saw something with y'all.
No.
Something
no, I'll tell you what I have done though. So Tommy and I played golf, a lot of golf together. We're really close friends. But I sang on a tribute project that Bob Kulik was producing. Actually, I've done two different things. I think Bob was involved in both of them. I played, oh man, one day I played bass on an Aerosmith tribute record they were doing, and Ainsley Dunbar was the drummer. It was the best, man. I got to play bass with Ainsley Dunbar, and we played Crying, you know, the slow Aerosmith tune. Jeff Scott Soto was singing lead vocals. So I was just the bass player on that. And then, and Bob was producing it. And I think it was Bob that was co-producing with Billy Sherwood on I did a remake of You're My Best Friend, Queen. They had me do the vocals. That was pretty fun. But I haven't played golf with that. I've only met Bruce once, but Bob was the one that I worked with.
Been around a lot of cool people. And I mean, if somebody, do a hole in one in front of somebody, that's something they'll never forget. Does Alex play a lot of golf? Is he a good golfer, or is he just doing it for the call?
He does. We're pretty evenly matched. And I've heard that about him. He plays about an 8 handicap, and I do too. And so we were pretty evenly matched. So it was a great day out there. And of course, Grant's a pro. He's like a +3 or something. So it was really a lot of fun.
Sounds like a good day of golf.
You play?
If you were in a tournament, I'm assuming y'all won. I do play. I love to play golf. I like golf. I like Rush.
I can tell.
I like Kiss. Yeah. So I got a fan in the chat room, and I got some calls coming, but I have a fan that I was unaware listened to anything but Todd, but apparently she knows about the band Chicago and wanted to know what you thought was the most important and impressionable song of Chicago's span, because there are so many.
The most important impressionable song?
Yes.
Important impressionable song. Why don't we go in eras? So the original band at the very beginning. You know, I didn't know this about them. I'm 57, so when they really hit the scene, I was too young to really be there at the very beginning of it. But having joined the group and playing this material for, you know, over 3 decades, there's a song called Dialogue that is basically a conversation between college students. One's a Democrat, one's a Republican. And it's pretty amazing how relevant it still is today. I think as a deep fan of the band, that probably would have been, you know, because they were late 60s hippie, you know, kids that were, you know, kind of writing some protest material. But for me, I'll tell you what, I'll never forget hearing Argus Amsari on the radio when they made their comeback. And it was revolutionary. In my opinion, it was as revolutionary as when they came out as a jazz rock band with horns in the late 60s, early 70s. And David Foster and Peter Cetera writing a song like that, the sonics of it, the standard of musical excellence, a pinnacle of songwriting, engineering, performance. I think that music changed that day. I mean, to this day, you hear people copying that, you know, regal, almost classical feeling elegance that David Foster really launched back then. And it, when I think of, let's see, that was 82. 3 short years later, I'd be the guy making those records. It's crazy, you know. So I would say those 2 songs. Great question.
All right, there you go, Veronica. All right, Veronica Moreno from Florida. We also have a call more from the northern part of the United States. This is Nancy Fantozzi. He's looking forward to talking to you. Nancy, what's up?
Hey, Doug. How are you?
Good.
Can you hear me? Okay.
Yes. We hear you great.
Okay. Hi, Nancy.
Great. Hi, Jason. How are you?
I'm doing well. And you?
I'm good. I'm so excited to get a chance to talk with you and very excited you're going to be on the tour. I've been a fan of Chicago since I was 9 years old, and it's just been an incredible, incredible time seeing them. I've seen them many times, and with you, quite a few, of course. And
wow.
You, and you're incredible. Your voice is amazing, and bass playing is awesome. And I think the thing that impresses me the most, knowing what a tough year you've had with your family, how strong and faithful you are. It's incredible. You're a great guy.
Thank you.
I guess my question, you're welcome. My question for you is kind of off the beaten path, but knowing that your dad was also a great musician and he had played with Elvis Presley and Elvis Costello during his career, I just wondered what influence he's had on your life and on your success.
Well, that's a great question. Well, my parents split up when I was really young, like probably 3 years old. So I didn't really grow up with them. Dad moved to Los Angeles and became a first call session musician. And so I saw him a handful of times as a kid. He was playing with the Fifth Dimension in 1968. And he came to San Diego and I went to see him, and it was incredible because I met them. We walked into the San Diego Civic Center, I think it was, and I met the Fifth Dimension and had no idea, you know, what their songs were. And then once they took the stage and started, "This is the dawning of the age of Aquarius," right? I'm going flipping out, going, "That's them! That's them!" Right? And my grandmother, who was picking me up after the concert, was late. And my dad said, "Oh, that's okay. Just fly back up to Los Angeles." I'd never been in a plane before. "And just fly back with us and we'll bring you back down." And I was sitting in the back of a taxi with Florence and my dad, and they were just going, "Yeah, this is okay." And my grandmother was freaking out, looking in every car trying to find me because she was afraid that I was going to be flying off with Dad. And I ended up doing Solid Gold with Chicago the first year I was with them, and Marilyn McCoo was on it, and I blew her mind, and I said, "I'm going to tell you something," that I met you in 1968, and it was really cool. So I had limited times with him, and when he was with Elvis, he brought me to Vegas with my brother Darren and said, I got you a great seat. We got to get you guys a black button-up shirt, long-sleeve shirt, because you're going to be sitting in the percussion stand." So I was on stage at 15 years old with Elvis. It was his last tour, too. He didn't last long after that. And I'll never forget the look of him, because when he turned back and looked at the band and the lights were hitting him from behind, it was that, you know, shadowy kind of look. And his face, I just really felt for him. But, you know, Dad had me there. And my brother Darren. And then, you know, we got to really spend a lot of time once I moved to Los Angeles, and we had some really fantastic times. And, you know, right when I joined Chicago, it was wonderful. My first tour, I was in Philadelphia. We were staying at the Four Seasons, and Elvis Costello was there, and Dad was in his band. So the next thing you know, I finished my gig. I must have been out on the road a week and a half on my first tour in 86. And we get back to the hotel, and down in the lobby is Elvis Costello, Jim Keltner, Ben Montench. And so it was just an incredible feeling. And my dad was just beaming. You could just see that he was so proud of his son. So then we split and went up to my room. And my dad says, "So Jason," he goes, "you want to see what it's like to be on the road?" And I go, "Yeah." He goes to my mini bar and basically cleans it out. He goes, "Welcome to the road." And he just starts popping all the little gin bottles. We had some great times. And but you know he played on one of Todd's records, don't you?
I didn't know that.
Oh. How about that? Dad's on one of the first records, and I don't know if it's Runt, but he's on a couple tracks.
Wow.
My father. How cool is that?
It's very cool. Well, thank you so much for answering my question, and looking forward to seeing you in September.
Oh, me too. Thank you for calling.
Sure. All right. Bye, Doug.
Bye. Thanks for calling in, Nancy. I think your dad was actually on the ballot of Todd Rundgren, so that's good stuff. How about that, Nancy? Good call. Appreciate the information. Good stuff. So, Jason, I was one time, this was years ago, just happened to go, and I know you probably love this place a million times, but I was at the Bluebird in Nashville because Todd's bass player, typically Chasm Sultan, was there for one of the songwriter circles. And all of a sudden, you come out of the audience and go up there and do a song with him.
No way. You were there that night?
Yeah, well, a long time ago, but I remember
that. Awesome.
Out of nowhere. Was that playing?
Or
did they invite you? I don't remember.
There was one time I did it as an actual, I don't know. Maybe I just played one song with them, but I think there's one time I did one that I was one of the four writers with Chasm, but I love him, by the way. Chasm, incredible. I got to sing backgrounds on his solo record. You know that?
He did on your solo record, you said?
No, on his. He had me sing on a track, yeah.
Is that right?
I love him,
though. Did a little research. Yeah, he's good people. I know he likes you a lot. And the time I was there, it was just, you just got up and did one song. And one of his friends was one of the songwriters. It was a great, what a great place. I mean, I wish I could go more. That's a really fun place. And I know you did a song there that, Boss Gags has made famous, and people still talk about it, and I've seen the YouTube of it. So it's, Nashville's unbelievable right now. It's just, has been for a long time, but it's becoming the New York and the L.A. of the music business. You know, everybody's moving down that way. So I'm not surprised that you go there back and forth. So you have places in both, and I guess you go to Nashville and you go back to L.A. and just kind of mix it up.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Hey, you know when I was telling you earlier that, or maybe the first caller, that when Chicago first came out, I was a little too young to really be into music that deeply to get albums and stuff. But being 57, the first year that I just got addicted to the radio and would listen all day long, Hello, It's Me had just come out. So that song, I am so excited to actually work with this guy, because that was the year. That song, and I think like Ramblin' Man was a hit. Zeppelin was still releasing singles. But that was a very important part of music for me. And Hello, It's Me is like a staple of that period of radio for me, right when I was getting into it. And, I've always appreciated Todd. I've always heard of, people that are just absolutely crazy about him. Elton John is my guy that I was just an absolute nut over. But I have some friends, and actually, I have a question for you. Do you know who John Fields is?
The producer?
Yep.
John Fields, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have you ever spoken to him?
No, I have not.
Do you
is he
know
a Todd fan?
How much he? Oh boy! I probably shouldn't even say this. I probably should, because I talked to him. I talked to John for about an hour, about a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, and he told me his whole thing. Because I knew how much he loved Todd Rundgren, but he gave me the play-by-play of first time he saw him, all this stuff, and I said, "Does Todd?" He's met him too. He's met him, but he's like, I said, does he know? He goes, I don't even think he knows that I play music. And I said, that's incredible. because John loved him so much and he would never want to, like, you know, throw that at him. But as you know, John Fields is one of the most brilliant musicians and producers on the planet. I mean, starting with Switchfoot and all the records that he's made. And Todd's his guy. Sorry, John, I had to out you.
Well, John, you know, because he's a musician and a producer like Todd. I mean, he's produced a ton of stuff. That's, I bet they'd have a great conversation. I'm sure he'll probably be, Jason, can I come to that show with you and hang out?
Well, believe me, I told him, I said, because that's the thing. He's just always been so, he'd probably kill me if he found out I'm telling you this and putting this out in public, but I don't care. Because Todd's influenced and inspired him so much that I think Todd, I don't know Todd yet, but I would imagine he would love to know that, you know, that he inspired somebody like a John Field. But John's just so classy, he would never throw that at me. Hey, Todd, tell me about how you did this or that. He's just been, you know, very, very cool about it, but he, Todd's his guy. And so I told John, I said, yeah, you're coming to some gigs, man. You got to come and hang. Absolutely. He's actually, John's been performing the White Album with a band that he has up in Minneapolis. So he was giving me some play-by-plays. You know, he's been playing bass in it.
Oh, there you go. Well,
you should have
the White Album.
I'll tell you what, you should have John on this show.
We'd love to talk to John sometime. We'd love to talk to people that know and appreciate Todd's music, absolutely, and people in the music business, absolutely. And
let me see if I can put that together for you.
Sure, right. Yeah. I'll stay in touch on that. That'd be great. Now, the White Album, are you a Beatles guy? I mean, is that one of your favorite Beatles albums? Did you get into the Beatles?
You know what? Yeah. Again, and I know it doesn't matter because I know that people of all ages have discovered them and just gone crazy over it. But the timing of it, again, when I started really listening to music heavy, the Beatles stuff that was being released at the time was like Bang Bang Maxwell's Silver Hammer, right? And so I didn't catch it at the time. Plus, you know, the other thing was I was really starting to go off into more of an R&B and a funk thing, although the Beatles, you know, were very funky and very groovy, you know, at times and stuff. But I came to appreciate it a lot more later. But I'll tell you what, just going into this stuff now, I think this might be my coming of age with the Beatles of at 57 to finally just go. I mean, I always appreciated what it is and the songwriting and the production and the vocals and everything. But now getting down to brass tacks and really pulling parts out and stuff, just going, wow, this is just unbelievable.
We're trying to figure this out about the White Album tour. You're going to obviously be playing bass. We know they added Gil for keyboards, and there's supposed to be two other players, and I'm assuming Mickey's not really going to play drums. He's probably going to be up front of the stage. Do you know who the other two guys are that are in the band that are backing you guys up?
I heard there's a great drummer. I can't remember his name. I'm so sorry, too. A great drummer that's really very fluent with Beatles, too. I think he's out of Texas, maybe.
Okay.
And so Joey will be playing keys mostly, but he said if I needed to take a break or something, he could play bass. But I like to play as much as I can, and they'll have me. So, and then what did you say? So there's going to be a lot of guitar players. There's Joey, there's Christopher, there's Todd. I don't think that they need any other utility guitar players.
No, there's keyboards, synth. Gil does. You got a drummer, and I don't know what the third person would be doing. Maybe I don't know if there's any kind of sax or anything like that. I don't know what the third would be.
Huh.
I don't know if you need any of that. But anyway, there's supposed to be three from what I understand, but we're not sure who that is. Just trying to get a head start on this deal. Not that it's critical, but, you know, the more we know, the happier we are for some reason. I don't know why it is. We love these things. It's important, you know.
Uh-huh.
Spending money, traveling all over the place. Todd fans, you'll notice you'll see some people, and I'm sure you have the same thing, that you'll see some people at multiple shows in different places that travel to see a few.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. What are Chicago fans like for you? I mean, are they cultish hardcore? Are they pretty much normal, and then they go to two or three shows and, you know, call it a day? Or how do you,
there are
how
some
would you
people,
describe them?
There are some people that come to a ton of shows. And, you know, I've grown up with a lot of these people. You know, what's amazing is that, you know, I've been doing some little things here and there, some one-offs, and there was a public show that I did with John Elefante, who was in Kansas. He replaced Steve Walsh when Steve left the first time. And then Steve Augeri, who replaced Steve Perry in Journey. The three of us went out and did a show in Indianapolis about 3 weeks ago, and it was so sweet. I haven't been out there, you know, since I came home to take care of the family for 3 years. There are about 10, maybe a dozen fans that I grew up with in Chicago. And it was the sweetest thing to see the tears rolling down their face, because I think they may have thought that they might not ever see me again, you know. And so it's a very sweet thing. And, you know, there's a pack of girls that have been coming. Like, I think there's at least four of them, maybe five, that really have just traveled around for years. And, you know, they'll be waiting out by the buses, and, you know, we've all been friendly for many, many years. Grown up together, like I said. And then all of a sudden one day I heard, you know, this is probably 6-7 years ago, all of a sudden I see, I think on Facebook, that one of them passed away. And it was the craziest thing, because I went out the next show that I, and there were like, I think there were four originally, and all of a sudden there were three girls there. And I looked down and I just realized that, you know, our lives are just flying by, and just take in the experiences, because it's so, you know, it's so cliche when you're younger, you know, live every day like it's your last and to the fullest. And you know, the older we get, and our parents get ill and they pass. And, you know, what that sweet girl said just a little while ago about, you know, what's happened in the last year, you know, I don't know if you know, but we lost a son 4 months ago. And, man, it is weird, you know, that out of order thing. And so again, you know, and I'll just go back real quickly to that. The second time I played with Alex Lifeson, it was about 3 days before the funeral for my boy. And I wasn't going to go, and they understood. It was a charity event in the desert. And Jay DeMarcus and Joe Don Rooney of Rascal Flatts were there, and Andy Childs, who is one of the leaders of the house band Six Wire, called me and said, I don't expect you to come, man, but if you do, you know, we're all here to love on you. And I talked to my wife and I said, you know, I don't want to go without you. And she said, no, you should go. I'm going to be with some friends. We'll be fine. And I said, well, I'll go under one condition. If you are freaking out at all, I don't even care if I'm in the middle of a song, you call me and I'm coming right back. It was in the desert in Palm Springs. So I took my son. He's going to be 18 on July 3rd. But I took Connor with me. And so we drove out, and it was a beautiful drive, very somber. And I showed up at soundcheck, and it was with Alex. And the first songs I played were the Rush songs. And it was just, you know, like we were talking earlier, what a great thing to hook up with Alex Lifeson and Rush, and I get to play Geddy Lee songs and everything. But this moment was just so much more beyond music. It was a friend that had this smile on his face when I walked up, and Alex threw his arms around me. And we talked about, you know, how I was doing and everything. And then all of a sudden we strapped in and we started playing Rush songs. And I'm telling you something. After the first song, Jay DeMarcus comes walking up on stage and walks by him and he goes, how you doing, man? And I said, you know, it's the weirdest thing, Jay, but I walk up on stage and I'm with people like this and we're playing this kind of music, and man, there is no pain. It's all gone. And right then I was going, this is where you need to be. This is where you need to be. You need to go out there and celebrate whatever days we all have, and the fans that have come up on Todd's music, on Chicago's music, on Christopher's, the Monkees, all this stuff, while we're here, and just enjoy this day, because one day one of us is going to be gone, and another day both of us will be gone. And I don't mean that to be morbid. It's enlightening to me, because it just shows that, you know, there's so much awesome stuff out there, and celebrate it because it's temporary.
Sure.
And so that moment was really great for me to realize no pain. That's where I need to be.
It shows the power of music. That's where I need to be. You had such a good experience post 9/11 with music. You had a good, a good experience in a tough time. Mm-hmm. When your stepson passed away, and I know Alex had some issues too. I'm sure music helped him get through those. It's a phenomenal what it can do for you.
You're right.
Appreciate you sharing that story.
Thank you.
And Alex, you know, had you guys, interesting, you know, you guys have similar stories in a way of, you know, deciding early you're going to do music despite what anybody else thinks and despite school and everything else. You just said, this is the route I'm going. And it paid off. It paid off very well. So congratulations.
Yeah, you know.
You guys made the right
call. Thank you.
Good stuff. So I have a call though from somebody from Idaho. Alexander Paul Walker is with us. What's going on, man?
Hey there. Jason, real quick, just want to take an opportunity for a quick story. And real quick for you, Doug, and everyone. My parents are kind of those Chicago crazy fans. They went out to one of those Chicago conventions like 2004. Met you guys. You guys are the sweetest people to them. And then I got to see you guys in 03. And I remember after a show, I caught you, Jason. I played the Lyric Opera House in Baltimore. And it was a handful of people. And I don't know if it's because I was like 14 at the time, but I was like, hey, Jason. And you quickly just turned to me and signed my ticket. And, you know, just that brief moment. And I just want to throw that music has been so powerful because my mom, who, you know, met you in 04, she passed away in 2010, and it was kind of difficult, because I grew up on the Chicago music and listening to the album, especially albums you were on, even the live stuff like 26 and the Christmas album. I was able to go listen to the music, and it was so therapeutic because it brought back so many memories that I was able to get a journal out and write down all these wonderful memories I had of listening to Chicago in those moments with my mom. So, Kawana, thank you so much on that, Jason. Appreciate that, what you guys created.
Brother, you have no idea how much that means to me because it's encouragement to keep doing what we're all doing. And you even calling in like this, man, this is the circle. And now more than ever, we all need to share this information and to be there for each other. And I thank you so much for telling me about that moment when you were 14, because I was 14 when I joined my mom's band, and I just remember what it was like when people would connect and acknowledge. So I'm really sorry to hear, about your mom, but I'm glad to be able to provide some type of comfort in any of it. And, wow. Thank you.
No, I appreciate it. You're not going to say it was a little tricky to listen to the Chicago Now album at first. I was like, oh, she's listening. But then I thought, you know what? She'd be super proud, and she would have totally dug into it. And it's a great album, too, by the way. And I know, obviously, you're here to talk about your new venture, but I was just curious as a Chicago fan on my side there, big Rundgren fan, too. You guys were going to do an album with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, and I remember it came out, I heard clips, and then it was gone. And I was just curious if you can elaborate a little bit on what happened there. I totally get it if you can't talk about it or don't want to talk about it, but I was just curious on that.
Well, when we performed with them, that was the Nashville Symphony I think you're talking about, right?
Chicago Symphony, the CSO.
On the Chicago, Chicago Symphony. That's right. The Chicago Symphony. Yeah, that was, the original members of the band were the ones that were involved in trying to figure out what to do with that. And I remembered hearing also that it was going to come out And then the same thing, it didn't. But I don't really know exactly what happened with that. But the, you know, I'm it's sitting there somewhere, so maybe someday it'll come out. But I'll, you know what, that was again, you know, when I talk about when I first got into radio, listening to radio at 12, 13, 14 years old, songs like Searching So Long, If You Leave Me Now, all of a sudden when I got to be singing those songs with an orchestra behind us and hearing those parts, that was surreal. So I hope that record comes out someday, because it was a lot of fun.
I guess it's the new Stone of Sisyphus then.
Exactly. I love it. You know the inside stuff. Yeah, the new Stone of Sisyphus. So, hey, what part of Idaho are you in?
I'm in Rexburg. I go to BYU Idaho, studying to be a history teacher. So.
Oh, great. Yeah, we were living in Provo. And I know a lot of people were coming back and forth from Idaho. Real quickly, when I joined my mom's band when I was 14, she got a gig in Twin Falls. So the first time I was ever on an airplane, was I flew up to Twin Falls, and that changed my life. I was 14 years old, and I knew what I was going to do for the rest of my life. I wasn't singing yet, but I was playing bass, and I went, man, this is it for me. And it was in Idaho, so it's great to connect with another Idaho person.
Thank you. I appreciate you taking the time to answer my question, and I'll keep listening more to the interview. But thank you so much. Thanks for letting me share a little bit of my history with you, Jason.
That's beautiful, man. Thank you.
Appreciate the call, man. That was a great call. That's cool, too, that his parents were in Chicago. You know, my recollections are Johnny Mathis. I'd have been much happier if my parents were in Chicago. But he brought up the Chicago convention. I was unaware of that. I know there's the country music conventions. KISS does these. I didn't know about Chicago. Can you tell me a little bit about what that was about, how often y'all did it, and what it was like?
They were doing it. The fan club would organize these conventions, and they were wonderful. They usually would be in Vegas. So when we'd be playing Vegas, they'd have a convention, and it would happen for 2 or 3 days, and we'd go down and hang out and talk and sign stuff for them. And yeah, that's how I got to know a lot of these people. And I always felt like they were more friends than quote unquote fans. You know, I became friends with a lot of these people, you know, over the years. I never really felt comfortable if somebody was really overly impressed to meet me. I always wanted to try and disarm it. I always wanted to try and just let them know, you know, I'm kind of an idiot. You'll find that out. I promise you. I'm not that cool. Promise you.
Hang out, you'll figure it out. You'll get jaded, maybe. I don't know. So did you have a lot of, you know, like Alex was talking about, so parents, because I'm starting to notice it a lot in the Todd community, that people are bringing their kids and their grandkids. Did you see a lot of young people at these conventions?
You know, not a lot, but I saw some, and that's another beautiful thing, is that there are people that are now probably in their mid-20s, maybe even in their 30s, that I saw as babies. Do you remember, I was out there for a little over 30 years. So I saw, you know, at first I saw the original, actually there were, I was seeing the second wave of Chicago fans. So in 1986 was when I first started touring. And so I saw the original fans that were 70s fans, and I thought, and I'd thank them. I'd say, thank you for sticking around, because I know that the guy that you came up on, having left, you know, some fans did leave, but the ones that stuck around, I said, thank you for giving me a chance. And then there was that 80s run that we all really contributed to. And so there were two distinct different types of fans. And then there were there were a hybrid also. But the original fans that were kind of enjoying the 80s and the softer stuff. And then there were people that just, like the kids that were coming up when we had the hits in the 80s, these kids, they would come up and they'd have Chicago 16, they'd say, or they'd come up with Chicago 16, 17, and 18 and say, I have all your albums, and they'd have 16, 17, and 18. And go, well, there's 1 through 15 also. And your mom and dad can probably help you with that. But you're right. All of a sudden, the next generation would come, you know, the grandchildren. And dare I say it, I mean, it's bordering on, I mean, they won't really know what the music is, but there's great-grandchildren out there now, you know? There's great-grandchildren of original fans that are out there. It's incredible.
Yes, and it's good music that's
like,
timeless music.
And like the gentleman just said from Idaho, this is what I've seen too, is that, you know, when you've been around as long as we all have, this music is the soundtrack to their lives. And so what he just said, I've heard so much that music is brings back the memories of driving to the shows, of the parents taking them to the shows, or the parents taking, I hear a lot of people say, I love your music because it reminds me of our family vacations when we'd be going to like a lake house and my parents would be playing Chicago music. You know, so it's fantastic.
That is great. So I'm going to take a second here since we're on that subject of conventions and whatnot. I'm going to make a pitch right quick. So get ready. My sales shoes are on. We, in Akron, 928, you guys are doing the White Album, one of the most beautiful theaters you'll ever see. And you're going to love the audience because everybody's going to be really into it. But we have a party the night before. It's our 12th annual party, regular birthday bash. And Chasm Sultan's Utopia is playing. And we have some other bands playing, some fun stuff. And we'd love for you to come by. It's your off night, so I know if you can't. But you'll be in town, so if you want to swing by, we'll get you an invite.
Oh, if I'm in town, I'm definitely coming by. Chasm's playing, I got to come.
Oh, yeah. Chasm Sultan's Utopia is fantastic. I mean, really good show. And Gil will be playing. He's going to be the keyboard with you guys on this tour, so you'll know him by then. We got an all-female Todd tribute band going to play and another tribute band. It's just a lot of fun. We have a really good time. And Nancy will be there, the one that called in. And Alexander Paul will probably be there as well. I mean, it's a lot of fun. Veronica will be there, the one that asked the chat room question. She has a scratchy voice, so she would have called in. So a lot of good fun fans that love and appreciate music like you wouldn't believe. They'll show the love. So I'll make sure to get that information to Billy, and we'll hopefully you can come by. And Chasm, of course, can talk to you about it. He'll be a nervous wreck.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, I'm playing. They're going to play, and they're not going to get a lot of rehearsal time. It'll be 6 months since they played together. But he was willing to do it for us. We've got a long history with him, so we're all excited about it. It's going to be a lot of fun.
That's so good.
Interested. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So going back to, I'll take my sales shoes off. You said that Elton was your guy. Have you seen the movie, the new movie that's out?
Not yet.
I haven't either. I've heard good things about it. Some of the people, some of the Todd fans have been giving it good reviews.
Yeah, I've heard it's great. I've heard it's great.
Yeah, have you seen him live a lot? Did you get to see him back in the day? Currently,
I've only seen him within the last, I'd say, 15 years. I didn't get to see him when I was younger, which I wish. My mother and I were standing outside of the San Diego Sports Arena and couldn't get in because couldn't get a ticket. And all of a sudden, they started playing Funeral for a Friend. It was right around the Goodbye Yellow Brick Road era, and I heard the crowd go crazy, and I was dying outside. So the song Jukebox Hero completely resonates with me. That was my experience of being outside, you know, hearing the crowd go crazy, and they were starting a Funeral for a Friend. But I've never met Elton, but I got to sing background vocals. I'm on five cuts on the album he did with Leon Russell, The Union, Elton and Leon Russell. But he wasn't there. He was on tour in Africa, and I was just all ready to meet my hero. I know he knows who I am, because his bass player that was with him for a long time, Bob Birch, rest in peace, told me one time, he goes, Elton loves the Christmas album. And I go, what? He's heard me? He goes, oh, yeah, man, he's playing the Christmas record. I go, you're kidding me. And so I have an old songbook of Caribou. And I said, Bob, I don't want to really do this, but I have to. Is there any way you can take this to him and have him sign this for me? And he goes, sure, man. So I sat down and I wrote a letter, kind of like Jay DeMarcus did to me. I wrote this letter, and it was the weirdest thing, because I'd had all these years and I was a successful guy, and I hadn't had this feeling in ages. And I wrote I took a pen all of a sudden when I wrote the words, Dear Elton, just this chill went through my body of going, I'm writing to my hero. And I wrote, I just want to tell you that Bob told me that you're enjoying the Christmas record, and you have no idea how happy that makes me feel that you've heard me, because you're the reason that I do what I do. I am completely inspired by you. And so if you wouldn't mind, I would love for you to sign this book. And he did. And Bernie Taupin was in the room and said, hey, give me that. I'll sign it too. And that was the closest I got. But I'm on his record and I love it, man, because it was incredible hearing his voice coming through the headphones and me getting to sing with it.
Yeah. Never too late. Maybe you'll get to meet him one day. You got a lot of connections.
That's true. Absolutely. Nigel Olson is a real dear friend of mine. He's played on a bunch of stuff for me, and so Nigel and I always talk about doing some stuff together too, so you never know, right?
What are some of your favorite songs that he does?
Well, Rocket Man. I do a version of Rocket Man. I have this real sort of interpretive, super laid back feel that almost borders on jazz, and I played it with so many different incredible rhythm sections, and it's always really based on just everybody feeling what I'm doing, you know, vocally and bass. In fact, I cut a version of it. There's a version sitting in the can with Jim Keltner and David Garfield, this great keyboard player, but me and Keltner and David Garfield, the three of us, and I sang it and I played it at the same time in the studio, and it's an incredible version of it. So I love Rocket Man. I play Goodbye Yellow Brick Road, Your Song, Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me. I just love him.
Is Rocket Man going to be on your album?
Not this one, but I've cut versions of it. I think David Garfield wants to put it on. In fact, that's what we're working on for that project is, David's got this great project that he started out just wanting to do a CD, and it's turned into four or five. It just keeps expanding because he calls anybody who's still around, like incredible musicians, you know, everybody, Steve Perroni, everybody known to man is on these recordings. John Densmore and I played a song, so the Doors drummer, me, David Garfield, Randy Brecker's on trumpet. It's insane. Yeah, David Garfield. It's called Outside the Box. It's like the Outside the Box series. So we've got two versions of Rocket Man, actually, two different drummers. Oscar Seton, who plays with Lionel Richie. So two very different versions, and then one with Keltner. And I love that about David. He's going, let's put them both on. Perfect.
Sure. Small World, too. The Becker Brothers are on Todd's best album, or most popular album, most commercially successful album, something, anything. So,
yeah.
They go back. It's a small world of the music business. You reminded me, you were talking about doing different versions of Rocket Man. I saw somewhere that you, I don't know if you still do them or not, but you used to do some kind of Saturday night, you know, like live, private, quote-unquote, studio things online, maybe?
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Tell me a little bit about how that went.
Do you know what Ustream is?
No.
Ustream was a streaming company. When the internet started getting fast enough to be able to have live streaming. I started streaming from my garage studio, and then literally took a laptop with a dongle that would be able to stream from clubs. So I started doing that, and I just, you know, really enjoyed these little private, they'd be Q&As, and I'd play a lot of Elton John stuff. In fact, I've kind of started it back then. If you want to just throw this out there to the listeners, that Rockstar Ready, RockstarReady.com. RockstarReady.com. If you go there, I've got a membership site that's free to join, and it's kind of building a street team. But I'm going to be doing some live Q&A, little jam session, concert things too, and it's basically building a bit of a street team. So when my record comes out and this stuff, you know, the awesome little projects like the White Album and everything else that we're going to do, that who knows what will spin off of this too. But if people want to check out my shenanigans, just go to rockstarready.com and sign up. And I'm going to do a little private, whatever you want to call it, pretty soon too. So but yeah, I used to do it a lot, but I'm going to get back into it.
Yeah. You'll see, you know, once you get something going with Todd, you'll get a lot of people that'll want to follow everything you do, and they'll start appreciating what you do and want to see it. And so we'll all check that out. We'll help promote it too as well. And the album too. And I noticed that you have, you know, taking advantage of Facebook Live and all the social media things. It's funny you talking about not being able to get a ticket to an Elton John concert. You're standing in line outside. You know, those days are gone, man. Going to the record store and hoping you can get a ticket and not even caring where it is.
I know.
You just want to get in. It's turned into,
yeah,
I got to get my ticket. The first 5 seconds they go on sale. If I don't get first five rows, I'm not going.
I know. I know.
But,
well, you know, that's another thing. You know, it's funny is that, another thing that I've always been intrigued about Todd is, first of all, well, going back to when I first became a fan of, you know, a huge radio fan, We're an American Band had come out like right around that time.
Yeah.
And you want to talk about one of the greatest sounding records, and I had no idea Todd Rundgren produced this, right? But it's like, there it is, that moment that, and Chicago 6 was out, Just You and Me, Feeling Stronger Every Day. Right, so all this stuff is right around the same time, 71, 72-ish. And then all of a sudden, when the computer thing started happening, there was a company called BitHeads that was one of the first software synthesizer companies. And I became friends with a guy, Andre, who was really running the thing. And I remember that he said Rundgren was all over that. He said Todd Rundgren is like going off in this whole computer, software synthesizer thing. So I didn't take it to the limit like him, but I was always intrigued, you know. And so when Logic Audio really got good, and I was the guy within our world, I was the early adopter. It had laptops out there, and I was taking rigs out there to record in hotel rooms and stuff. So, you know, I also read a book on Todd's production. I can't remember the name of the book, but it was really great to see.
Paul Myers, great book.
Yes, exactly. And here's what I never really understood. And then when I started reading about it, and then I went back and did some old research, I had no idea that for the most part, most of that background vocal stuff was Todd and what he did.
That's
what I do. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Because, see, that's part of what I did. That's part of what worked with me joining Chicago, was the fact that I could layer my voice, and it was pretty easy for me. It was a sound. But then when I went back and I started listening to what Todd, and then the Celine Dion stuff and the Meatloaf stuff, and you're going, that's what I do. I mean, I'm not trying to compare myself to him, because I mean, he's on a whole other level. But another thing I do for John Fields would always, you know, send me stuff, and he'd call it the beams. He'd go, the laser beams, you know, because my voice, just like Christopher Cross, it's a very pure sound that Fields would always tell me, what I love about your voice is that I can tuck it back where you don't even really hear that there's a voice, but it's a frequency. It's almost like a harmonic that is around the word. So John had, you know, he hit me up. I'm on the road, and he goes, I got a couple of Clay Aiken tracks, man. Can you sing some background? Absolutely. Hey, I got this artist, can't remember her name, but Nick Jonas was singing on this thing, and I need you to be him and her. I go, absolutely. Well, when I started really going back and seeing what Todd did, I go, that's exact. There it is. Now I get it. I get the whole, you know, super, you know, deep level genius of what Todd is about. I had no idea.
It's amazing how many connections he's got and how many people he's influenced, and that's how we've survived doing the show for 12 years. But you've been extremely generous with your time. I'm going to ask you one more question and let you go, because I know you spend a ton of time with us, and we greatly appreciate it. But there was something, you know, I know you. If you weren't doing this, you had mentioned, I saw an interview that you would like to help others, but you were kind of already doing that, from what I understand, doing some stuff with musicians who were trying to break into the business. Can you tell me a little bit about that and how you were helping them or teaching them some of the tricks of the trade, I guess, for lack of a better term?
Yeah, that's another reason that I really wanted to funnel all of the activity that I do with anybody who's interested into what I ended up calling Rockstar Ready, because that was really originally meant to be an educational platform, you know, to get you Rockstar Ready. But then fans that didn't want to be playing music, and they'd say, well, I'm not really that. I don't want to, you know, well, we can be rock stars in all different aspects of our lives too. You can be a rock star father, a rock star, you know, surgeon, whatever, a rock star, barista at Starbucks, whatever.
Right.
But, yeah, that's part of what I do. If you go and check that out, the Rockstar Ready site, you know, I'm going to have a section that's just for, like you were talking about earlier, streaming, some Q&As, I'll play some music, whatever, take some requests. But also if people are interested in how to make music, I have some educational stuff on there too. I got some lessons, you know, on how I basically, what I think about when I make music. And I talk to my friends a lot about this, and it's funny because when you do something and you're pretty decent at it, I just assume everybody else knows how to do it. I go, this isn't that special. Doesn't everybody know how to do it? They go, no, they don't. So then some of the things are really like little tricks of the trade. Like one thing I love hearing about when Todd's doing his big background vocal thing, I remember the one engineer said, or the second engineer said, it was bizarre. I watched him barely making any sound coming out of his mouth, but then once he played it all back and it was on the speakers, it was giant. And I went, exactly. You don't have to be screaming into the microphone, but you start layering it up, and that softness creates a huge sound. So, yeah, that's what I love to do. I like to help and teach too. So. Yep.
That's the trick to happiness, they say, so good stuff. We appreciate you helping us out and being so generous with your time. This has been fantastic. People are raving about it in the chat room, and we'll stay in touch and look forward to meeting you on September 27th at our party and seeing you perform on the 28th in Akron, if not before, because there's going to be some shows. Some of us will be hitting those too. It's very exciting times. We're glad you're involved with this tour and look forward to seeing you and meeting you.
You too, buddy, and you know, there's a lot of good golf around Akron.
Yeah, Firestone, man. Exactly.
Firestone.
My eight handicap.
Come on.
Yeah. We may have to find a way to get on that bad boy. That's a great course. Yeah.
I used to know some
people.
All right. Let's see what I can do.
Yeah.
Let's see what I can do.
I know. We got somebody that claims they got connections over there, too. So we'll see. We've been going over there for years. We Akron loves Rugman Radio, I can tell you that. We take over the town when we go. It's a lot of fun. Good city. You're going to love this venue.
Awesome.
By the way. It's a really fantastic venue. All right. Well, good talking to you, and have fun in L.A. and Nashville, wherever it takes you. And we'll catch up with you another time. Appreciate it so much.
Thank you, man. I've really had a blast.
Great. 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 Excellent. Thank you. All right, everybody. It's Jason Sheff on the radio. You are listening to. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back and wrap this up.
Hi, this is Mary Lou Arnold, Todd's longtime tour and production manager, and you are listening to Rundgren Radio.
If the rain comes,
all right, everybody, thanks for listening. We'll schedule another show. We're going to look for more people from that involved with the White Album. That was a lot of fun. What a great show. And we will try to get Jason on our Facebook page, and we'll give you all the information we talked about tonight, all the web links and all that good stuff. And appreciate the callers. Everybody, was some great calls tonight, by the way. We really appreciate it. And don't forget, Akron, Ohio, 12th anniversary Rundgren Radio birthday bash. It's going to be fun. Looks like Jason's going to come attend. I think he will. He's good buddies with Chasm. Who doesn't want to see Chasm Soul's Utopia? I mean, come on. What a great show that's going to be. 927 in Akron, Ohio. Check it out on our website, rundgrenradio.com. Go down, scroll down on the menu. You'll find it, the RR Birthday Bash link. We appreciate Jason being on, and we will definitely do some more things concerning the White Album tour and do some more shows. So looking forward to it. Thanks for listening.
Hi, everybody. This is Todd Rundgren, and you're listening to RundgrenRadio.com.
You are the creme de la creme, my friend. Well, thank you so much for your support.